I'm Sharon Hom from Human Rights in China.
As we can see walking around WISIS, trade, international trade and ICTs is growing, basically at an expo center at the moment. And a lot of the new technologies are going to China. What are some of the implications for Chinese people, especially dissidents and human rights defenders?
Well, a lot of the technology that's already there in China, the technology that was built by lots of foreign companies like Nortel and Cisco, and the software which is being provided by like Microsoft, and then all of the web and services like Yahoo, etc., AOL, Google. There are several implications. One is that China now has essentially the state of the arts in the whole world in terms of infrastructure for the internet. It is in terms of bandwidth, in terms of, so that it has state of the arts. It also has state of the arts on the other end, which is on the surveillance capacity. So surveillance and censorship is also state of the arts. So while it does have a very impressive infrastructure, it also has a corresponding censorship and content filtration and firewall, a very sophisticated system of information control.
And what kind of information would the Chinese government be trying to control?
Well, a very wide range, almost all information, basically, that any information that under the Chinese laws, for example, under state secrets law and state security law, every single classification of information on population control, on labor disputes, on mining accidents, on child labor, on number of executions, on criminal justice statistics, you know, you can name the full range of the social and economic issues, the full range. These statistics and this kind of information will be subject to a pervasive classification scheme which takes this information and designates this as either a state secret at some level of secrecy, and which means that it cannot be freely disclosed, transmitted, discussed. So that's one set of, you know, controlled information. The other is anything that is considered politically sensitive, talking about democracy, for example, making a comment on the policies of the government, that would be considered sensitive. Not even being critical, just trying to have a different view or a different analysis of the policies. This would all raise concerns that what you're saying is either endangering you or, you know, would be subject to censorship.
Where is most of this technology coming from?
Well, I think in the beginning, much of the technology that built the Golden Shield had a lot to do with Canadian technology, and that was Nortel. Nortel, which is, you know, this company which is currently active in building the Tibetan Railroad project for the Chinese government. So it still continues to be quite active. The other foreign companies, you know, the ones I've just named, are all still quite active in China. In addition to that, there are new companies that are bidding with respect to providing surveillance, a high technology, sort of biometric crowd control kinds of technology for the Olympics. So we're going to see, in addition to the companies that already went in the first wave, building the infrastructure and the backbone and the basic services, you're going to see, particularly with between the WTO opening of the markets and the hosting as we lead up to the Olympics and the bidding for these kinds of products and equipment and services, we're going to see even more foreign participation in the whole technology landscape in China.
These companies like Nortel and like Yahoo, who sell technologies to China which are used against dissidents and human rights defenders, what are their reactions to activists or organizations such as Human Rights in China who come to them and ask them to take responsibility for their technologies?
Well, I think that we shouldn't lump them all together. I think that they're different. They're different from two respects. One is they're different because if you're building the routers like Cisco, or you're providing web services like Yahoo, or you're an ISP or providing a search engine, or you're providing a search engine like Google, I think that they present different kinds of challenges as well as opportunities for promoting human rights. They because of the nature of their business or their activities in China. So with respect to the companies specifically, you know, we have produced, and it's on our website, HRI China, HRICHINA.org, under the IR 2008, we've produced a framework for best practices for promoting human rights and to avoid being complicit in human rights violations, a framework for companies, IT companies, and that's how we analyze their obligations and their opportunities, is that we break it down and think that if you're, you know, what you're, when you're providing hardware versus providing software versus providing services, there are different issues at stake. But the main sets of issues that we are concerned about across the board from the, for the IT companies in particular, have to do with the freedom of expression, right to information, privacy, and the whole question of, you know, content surveillance, etc. And the companies, depending on where they're located in terms of the work, have really have an opportunity to make a difference, badly or, you know, adversely or in a positive way.
Yahoo has been in the news recently, and not in a very positive light at all. Apparently, Yahoo has had passed information on to the Chinese government that led to the arrest of a reporter. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. The reporter, Shi Tao, is a reporter for Business News, and had a Yahoo.cn account. When Yahoo went to Yahoo.hk Hong Kong, which I believe is a wholly owned, you know, holding company, and asked for information, they disclosed the information. The public position, as we understand it from Yahoo, is that they have to comply with Chinese law and that they had to provide the information. From the human rights civil society perspective, we think that any company in that position, you know, had at least three levels of obligations that they should have considered before handing over information which they knew or should have known would result in the imprisonment of the particular individual, here in this case a journalist, who was then subsequently sentenced to 10 years, a very, very heavy sentence. So the first level is when foreign companies doing business in a host country has to comply with domestic law. But domestic law, whether it's Canadian law or EU law or Chinese law or Tunisian law, domestic law in each national regime has several layers relevant to a foreign company doing business in a host country. And there's the laws that are relevant to the business, but there are also laws such as the Constitution, laws that are purport in the Chinese Constitution, there's a human rights provision. So laws that are relevant to the full range of legal protections for the citizens and for that I would say that foreign companies also have to abide by. The second thing is that China has signed on to a range of international human rights treaties, non-discrimination, you know, women, the CEDAW, rights of the child, the economic, cultural, and social rights. So in signing these international human rights treaty obligations, they have taken on these international obligations, which then become part of domestic law. These international obligations are part of domestic law. So therefore, it would be more accurate to say, yes, Yahoo has to abide by Chinese law, but it's Chinese law which, on the one hand, does have the state security state, which are problematic law, and on the other hand, also should be reflecting laws of China's growing international human rights obligations, and that's another part of the law which I think a foreign company has an obligation and an opportunity to be promoting and to be advancing those kinds of protections. Thirdly, in addition to domestic Chinese law, and international, particularly human rights obligations that have become part of domestic law, thirdly, any foreign company doing business in a host country is still subject to relevant law of the home country. So a Canadian country like Nortel should be subject to Canadian law. A U.S. company is subject to U.S. law. And this is true for any foreign company. So, for example, U.S. law prohibits bribery, corruption, Foreign Corrupt Bribery Practices Act. You can't do that in the U.S., and you can't do that in China. this is the other kind of law that foreign companies doing business abroad must abide by, the law of their own host jurisdictions. So Canadian companies really need to be in compliance with Canadian law with respect to their operations abroad.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the work that you've been doing with bringing down the Chinese firewall?
Well, we're not bringing down the Chinese firewall because I don't think we have the resources to do that. The firewall, as I said, is part of a whole very sophisticated, extremely state-of-the-art system called the Golden Shield. The firewall is just one part of it. In addition to the firewall, there's a whole system of content filtration and surveillance so that the technology is backed up by internet police, backed up by pledges of self-censorship that's required by the operators of internet cafes, and it's backed up by a whole police social control apparatus, and of course the detentions of any cyber activists or journalists or anyone else posting, students posting, independent political parties posting, anyone who runs afoul, when they get detained, that has a real dampening effect and could result in more self-censorship and contributing to maintaining this climate of fear and self-censorship. So our project, with our limited resources and our limited goals, is to promote and support and to amplify those civil society voices inside China that are operating under these, or trying to speak, or trying to articulate and raise these issues in a very difficult climate. And the way that we do it is through an adaptive technology project, which aims at building a virtual public commons, a virtual space where Chinese groups and individuals such can post and put information out. We send in an electronic newsletter every week to over 280,000 a week. So we get very good feedback. We get letters from China. We post those as well. So we get that. Secondly, we also part of it is providing proxy access to people behind the firewall so they can get out, and of course supporting this technology solution. The real key is the content, and the content predominantly comes from inside China, people who provide information, short news items, stories, issues of concern. That's what we're sending back in so that we keep the information alive and we keep the space for discussion and reporting alive.